T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now back to Joe Lo and Dibs.
Well, think about it. I don't understand it.
On 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. We are live at 957thegame.com. You may ask yourself why. Why at 8:33 are you live? You only go live for the championship rounds at 9. What gives? Here's what gives. Golden State Warriors owner Joe Lacob, kind enough to join us in studio for the next hour. So we're going live on the stream. Mr. Lacob, you look fantastic. I'll start with that.
I'm not sure how to take that.
We'll do a little buttering here early on, set the stage for a nice, pleasant interview. But thank you so much for coming in. I know you're a busy guy, so it means a lot to us. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I normally get up twice a week early to go play basketball in my games. So, but when it's not for basketball, it's just a little harder, you know, because you don't. That's what you get up for, to play. But to come up and talk to you guys, I mean, I don't know. It just wasn't quite the same.
Not
but
the same.
I'm still excited to be here. But
so twice a week you get up and get it in?
I do. Really? I've been doing it for decades.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. 6:45 on the court.
5-on-5, four court.
Yeah.
See, that's real basketball.
Absolutely.
Wednesday, very different than that. They were arguing as to how far they're going to take the ball back out for their one-on-one. The free throw line was apparently too far.
Yeah, too
You're
far.
Running up and down the court for how long do you guys play for?
It's about an hour and 20. Hour and 15, hour and 20.
That's good exercise Great. Right there.
Wow. Yeah.
Actually, it's pretty, if you love basketball and it's in your blood when you started when you're young, it's hard to get any the same excitement or adrenaline from any other workout. So I love doing it.
What time do you get up when you're not getting up to play basketball? Guy like you, what time you wake up?
You know, I used to be an early riser kind of guy. Now, it depends. I mean, for basketball, for golf, or something like that, I'll get up early. Otherwise, like meetings at Chase Center with Raymond, I'm not doing that until like 9:30 or 10.
All right, there you go. I can't say I blame you. That's what you've been doing. You got to call your own shots. It's a beautiful thing.
You tell Raymond, do not start a meeting before 9. If you're on your own, right? Yeah,
not coming in too early.
Exactly. Your love of basketball, where did it first start? Just take us down memory lane. When did you fall in love and say, you know what? I love this game.
I was 9 years old.
Sure.
I lived in New Bedford, Massachusetts, which I don't know if you know much about. There's not much. And I'll never forget. I played, you know, as a kid, baseball was my major thing. But I never forget, played basketball on the hardtop a little bit. I was a little kid. And I went to a boys club. Mm-hmm. And I've told this story many times. First time I'd ever seen an indoor court, a hardwood. Wow. And I just, I remember like it was yesterday, which is a long time ago, that just love of, it was so exciting to me for some reason. It still is. Whenever I walk into a gym, especially if it's a gym I haven't seen, right. I see the hardwood floor and I get all excited. And in fact, in my life, I have now built 3 basketball courts. Wow. I've got like this sort of weird thing going on about this. 2 of them were at houses, believe it or not. And one of them was at 8,000 feet up in the mountains. I had a ski house. And below the house, so 35 foot below the house, had a court. We used to play after skiing all day, 8 hours, we'd go play basketball at 8,000 feet at 4 p.m. with the other kids around there. And the third one, of course, is the most expensive.
Yeah.
That being Chase Center.
We've heard of that one.
Nice little gym you got there.
1 millionth fan came through last night. 1 millionth customer, client. What's the official word we're using? The 1 millionth?
Yes. Yeah, guest. That's a good word.
1 millionth guest. That's the word I'm looking for. 1 millionth guest. Did this guy know he was the millionth guest?
I don't know if he did or not. He did know. Okay. Raymond says the truth is they did know.
So he comes out the highlight last night. It's not just walking through and, hey, here's a handshake. And
he didn't know what was going to happen, probably.
This guy got a huge response last night.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I was out there and You know, it's hard to believe a million guests so quickly. It's our first year.
Right.
But it was pretty exciting. Everyone was all around there waiting because they didn't know if it was some celebrity coming through or whatever. It was really nice. We gave him two floor seats. I didn't talk to him after, but I'm sure he had a good time. And it was a pretty nice, you know, feeling for us.
Now that you've had this open for a year and you are able to look at it, how remarkable is it as compared to what you envisioned it to be? Because we've all been there in a variety of capacities, and it truly is an incredible arena. But this is something that you saw literally from the first shovel in the ground to now what it is. Has it met all your expectations?
You know, it's not really just even that short period of time. I've loved basketball for 50 some odd years now.
Right.
And I don't know what it is, but the idea of building the perfect basketball arena has always been something that is in the back of my mind would be the most exciting, interesting things to do. Not just owning a team or playing or all these other things. I love the idea of that. When I was a kid, I used to go to the old Boston Garden. Yeah. And it was bad in many ways, but I didn't know. And it was just so unique. I love the uniqueness of sports facilities. So, you know, when you go to some new arena or a new stadium and it's sort of, it's like all the others, not so exciting. When you go to a place that's pure, that's exciting. And I kind of hope, and I think that we did that here. We achieved something that's pure for basketball. Obviously very good for concerts as well, acoustics and so on. But the idea that it's pure, that it's not some giant, and I don't want to put down other arenas per se, but some of them are multi-purpose, hockey. They're very large. They're really big and cavernous. Maybe down in Southern California.
I know a place like that.
We wanted something pure. Yeah. And I really feel that our place, when you walk in there, not only is it high-end and nice and meets modern-day requirements for what our fans expect, especially fans in the Bay Area, in terms of services and so on, and how they're taken care of, but it's intimate. I hope you guys feel that way when you walk in there. It's intimate, and it's got a specialness to it that it's just unlike any other place. And so I think we're really proud of it. We're really happy with the way it's gone. We're not happy with the year on the court that's happened at the same time, but we're going to rectify that.
Warriors owner Joe Lacob joining Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Mr. Lacob, you talked about earlier this 9-year-old kid that was on a first time entering into a hardwood floor court and talking about just the maturation of how where you are today. When did you think that, man, is this possible for me to own a team? What was the possibility? When did those stages of, you know, kind of your life where you're like, man, this is becoming more of reality where you wanted to be like you are today?
You have to dream.
Yeah.
Right. You have to dream. And I've always been a dreamer. In fact, I got in trouble when I was a little kid. And I've never told this, actually, but in school, third grade or whatever, and the teacher, fourth grade, they'd come and say to my parents, you know, he's off in some other world sometimes, dreaming, daydreaming. Maybe I was a little bored in the class. I don't know. I was a good student. But I guess the thing is, I've always sort of been a dreamer, thought everything was possible. I was grew up in a relatively poor environment, I guess you could say, a tough neighborhood. Had nothing. I was the first person to go to college in my family. So I probably had no right to dream some of those dreams, but I did. And when did I first think I'd really make that dream come true, I think is your question. Probably when I was in my 30s, I kind of realized I was doing pretty well in my first life of business, which was venture capital and technology, and enjoying it as well. But I knew that it wasn't ultimately fulfilling to me, ultimately, because I had this sort of passion inside me that this is what I wanted to do, was to own an NBA team someday. It's just something I've always loved. And so, you know, once I decided it was possible, there was no stopping it.
Wow.
What's that like the first time? Because I'm never going to know this feeling. That first time you say to yourself, I want to buy a basketball team, and it's not a farce. Like, it's actually something you can think about doing.
Yeah,
like,
I
want to buy a basketball team. Like, I'm going to want to have lunch today. So at some point, I'm going to go, I want to have lunch.
Well, those that know me, this is a funny story, but if you were to talk to friends of mine, they would tell you that they thought I was a little crazy, because even when I was younger, early 20s, 30s, that's what I used to talk about. Say, someday, that's what I want to do. They'd hear me say that and say, that's a weird thing for some tech guy to say. But that's kind of always what I've wanted to do. And
spoke it. Wow.
And so sometimes when you think about something for long enough, you dream about something for long enough, you work hard all your life, you know, good things can happen. It is America. And you know, I was able to do it, fortunately, obviously. And I started looking really in my 40s. You know, this was a 10-year process. I almost bought several other teams. Probably wasn't quite ready to do that, but I was already starting the process and got a lot of experience with what it takes to be an owner. And when the perfect one came along, which was in my now home for, I don't know, almost 40 years, mm-hmm. where my kids have grown up, and it was NBA, and the Warriors I'd become a fan of, going to all those games for years and years and years, and, you know, a lot of losing being absorbed, obviously, but but it was still exciting for me. And the idea, actually, I love the idea that we could turn something around almost more than buying something that was already sort of great at the time. That was sort of part of the process of the fun of it all, right?
No question. And when you're thinking about that, what about all the dream killers that you probably have encountered? What kept you going? What was the driving force? Because, you know, in life, you see so many people that tell you, you can't. What was one of those driving forces that you said, you know what? I believe.
I don't know. I don't have a specific one. You know, honestly, I've always believed I can do whatever I wanted to do. I mean, you can call it a little confident. Some would use other words, I guess.
Yeah.
But I'm a very linear guy. I mean, I get an idea of something and I'm going to do it no matter what. So that's just the way I've been, no matter what I was doing.
No matter the naysayers.
Starting companies. Going to school, getting into the certain school. I mean, I've just always been very, very driven to the extent that I even I don't think I really enjoyed my – I mean, people say, what's your best decade? You know, and I'm in my 60s now. So it wasn't my 20s because I don't remember anything. It was all work. I was working all the time. All I was so focused on work. I mean, I probably could have had a lot more fun, drank more and done whatever kids do. But I just – that wasn't me. You know, I was just a very driven kind of person towards these kind of big end goals. And I really don't believe there's anything that I can't do if I set my mind to it, or at least try. And so that's just who I am. I'm always looking forward. I've said this before. I do not like the idea of looking back. I don't like looking at the past. Yes, it's fun to smell the roses every now and then, sure, I understand, sure. But for a minute or two. Otherwise, you're all caught up in your own ego and your own whatever. That's not what it's about. It's about getting there. It's about the process of working hard, going through all the systematic approach to try to get to your goals. And then when you get there, you know, that's cool when you're there, but actually the fun part's getting there.
Wow. Fast forward when you you got the team. You own the team. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about the losing. What was some of those driving forces? What was the pieces you said, how can I change this team? From you bought it now you own it. It wasn't necessarily a championship team. What was that process of the diligence?
Are you thinking about buying a team?
I'm always people that have accomplished things. It just always
this is free consultation.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, by the way, I just want to say something. No, I'll answer this question, but I want to say something. Walking in here today, I told Raymond. I said, you know, I like going on this show, but there are a couple other shows I want to do too. Because these guys, they're just all about having fun in the morning. It's all chipper and fun, and I'm a little more intense than that. And he looked at me, laughed, you know. So I love this. This is great. I love this. We're on to some really cool stuff here.
Yeah.
We put the foolishness aside for one day.
Yeah, no joking around on this program.
All business. Change of perception, what you think
about
it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What was the question?
Damn, good of a question. Huh? Wow. No, but fast forward. You accomplish what your dream. You own a team.
Yep.
Then what went into it to get it to where it's at, to win? What were some of the pieces that you knew that you, in order to change the perception of the Warriors who they were?
So this is an interesting question, actually. I had thought about doing this for so long that I had a lot of ideas about it, right or wrong.
Right.
And it wasn't like I came into this like, you know, say, oh, at 65 years old or something, I said, I'm also buy a team. I got so much money. I can do whatever. I mean, that's what some people do, I'm sure. It's a little bit of a, and I'm not pointing out any names, but they haven't prepared for it their whole life. I've been thinking about this forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, dreaming about it forever. And watch a student of the game. I would like to think a student of the business of basketball and business of sports. And, you know, even when I was in venture capital, I was starting internet sports companies back when it first started. And CBS Sportsline was a company I started. And so I've been thinking about it for a long time and watching basketball. And, you know, we all, when you want to become an owner, you all well, I could do it better. That's the natural attitude, right? I could do it better than the next guy. And I certainly had that hope and desire and thought that I could as well. So, I mean, I thought about it for a long time about how, what kind of a culture I would have, how teams play together, style of play. All those things were not like think of later. Those are things I thought about before. Mm. Now, we were very lucky. I was incredibly lucky. We were lucky, all of us. In fact, the whole Bay Area is lucky,
right,
that Steph Curry was on this team when we bought the team. He was a rookie. He was a very different player. But you have to have a little luck in life. And you have to recognize when you have a little luck in life. You know, the fact that we had Steph Curry and that we could base a cult, not just a style of play, but a culture around an individual that is so amazing, in my view. Like, unbelievably unique. And I think that was helpful. But all of the things you're talking about doing, you know, we'd thought about, and I'd met Peter Gruber a number of years ago, who's a, you know, tremendous guy. He had all the skills that I recognized that I didn't really have, which is entertainment. And that part of sports, you know, I'm more about the basketball and about the arena,
right.
And maybe the style of play and the culture of the team and hiring, you know, and running an organization is something that I'm good at. I've been a CEO a number of times and built up all these companies. So all the things I have, but Peter had the whole entertainment aspect of it all. And so it was I knew I needed a partner, someone that was great at providing those missing pieces to the overall view of what we wanted to accomplish. So when we did it, make a long story short, I think we had a pretty good idea of where we wanted to be a decade later, which I guess we are a decade later now.
How about it?
You know, we built a team the style of play we won. We had to get lucky along the way. It was great. And then we built an arena, and that took 7 years, and that was a lot of work. And now we're thinking about what we're going to do for phase two.
Warriors owner Joe Laca with Joe Lo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Let's talk about phase two, the thought process going into finishing off this season and then getting ready for next season. Obviously, the landscape of the NBA has changed a little bit. You've got Kawhi Leonard with the Clippers and all that stuff you guys will be contending with next season. But let's start with the obvious. Steph looks like he's set to come back at the beginning of March. The organization's got to be excited about this. The Wizards would be the first game. It looks like five of the first six, if he hits that target date, would be at home. So that's the perfect landing for Steph. You'd have to figure, get him out at Chase Center and then work from there. Do you guys still envision that as the plan, him coming back March? Is everything going according to plan, I guess, is what the fans probably want to know.
I think it's on plan, but we won't know until, you know, the doctors and Steph give the okay. That's the target date. Looks good, but I can't say for sure. I mean, we're not going to do anything that would in any way potentially harm him or – you know, cause a setback. So that's the goal. Hopefully he does. And I think the whole Bay Area will be excited to see Steph Curry play again.
What's the thought process like right now that's been going on this year going into the upcoming offseason in terms of how you want to reshape the club? I know there's a lot you can't talk about, and that's fine, but I would imagine that this is almost like embarking on the challenge from the first time when you bought the Warriors and you came in. There's a lot of moving parts. And again, the landscape of the West has changed a little bit. So, I mean, the blueprint from now until the offseason, how do you compare it to other offseasons, for example?
Really fun for me, you know, for us. Because remember what I said, it's about the process, right? And so we knew that at some point you're not going to go to every final
right.
And to win every championship. That's just not going to happen. What we did was almost unprecedented, the Celtics.
Sure.
And I would argue, honestly, as great as I loved the Celtics when I was a kid, the 60s, what were there, eight teams?
Right.
I mean, it's a lot harder now. And the athletes are just, it's just different.
There wasn't as much player movement either.
Yeah, I think it's a lot harder to do what we did than they did. And I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying it's a different era. So I think we knew it would end at some point. Now, you never know how it's going to happen. It's sports. People get injured. Mm-hmm. We had two horrific injuries in, two consecutive games. Then Durant decides to leave, and so Clay gone, and then Steph gets hurt in game four. I mean, you know, things happen. It's right. Sports, guys. And so we had to accelerate our thinking this year and do a whole lot of work. We've been working really hard about how we're going to create this next phase. We have the tremendous fortune of having Steph at early 30s, 32. 31, not even 32 yet. He'll be 32 in March. You got Clay and Draymond, who are basically 30-year-olds. They've still got some time left here, guys. Right. They're in their prime. So that's a great thing. So I think our plan this year was to figure out how can we use this year, not that we're going to lose. We certainly didn't want to lose. But if, stuff happens, if we're losing, how do we accelerate things? How do we take a look at a lot of young players? How do we see what fits for next year in the whole puzzle? We've got this great core to build around. We've got to replace that three position. We think we have done it now. We started that process last summer. You know, basically for Kevin Durant, who left on his own accord. I wish he didn't, but he did. We wound up with a, you know, a really good positional fit in on in Wiggins, and wound up with a first and second round pick that could be very, very attractive picks. Right. I mean, you to get that for a guy that was leaving for nothing, and we could have had nothing. So I think that was good. We're spending a lot of time on the draft. We're going to have a high pick this year. Likely have a good pick, a really good pick next year. That's going to help. We haven't had a draft pick higher than number 7, Harrison Barnes,
right,
in the entire tenure of my running this organization. In fact, that Clay was our first pick, our first time we had a draft pick, which was at number 11 in 2011. We just haven't had high picks. It's hard in the NBA. It's hard enough even if you're in the top 10,
right?
Because there's a certain amount of randomness to this. It's just not automatic.
Right.
Who do you send there to be the individual for the lottery? Every team's get real used to it because they're there every year.
Oh, that's a social question. That's a different question.
Yeah, it's a big question.
Yeah, I don't know. We haven't decided that yet, but we've got some interesting ideas.
But you've thought about it.
Oh, yes.
He's thought about everything. Absolutely.
I was going to say.
It's not going to be Raymond.
We'd like to offer
it. It's not going to be Raymond. You're not on my list. I'm sorry. You deserve it maybe, but...
Lorenzo Neal is a great ambassador in case you need to think outside the box. He would be a great representative.
We've got some outside-the-box picks. Lorenzo, I think you're great. 16 years in the NFL, but it's not going to make the cut.
He has thought about this. I love that.
Oh, yeah. We've got some very interesting ideas.
All right.
Okay. And I don't want to blow it.
No, that's fine.
They're actually really fun.
Don't blow it.
Some are four-legged animals. I don't know.
They look at us differently here in the Bay Area. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Warriors owner Joe Lacob with us here on 95.7 The Game.
It used to be an annual pilgrimage to Secaucus, and this is the first time. And I've been a Warrior fan for almost 50 years, and the draft lottery was always the biggest
event. I think it's in Chicago this year.
Oh, no more Secaucus.
Well, they changed.
That's good for the representation.
Shorter flight.
What do you think of the fan base who's been so loyal and so good this year, not only making the trip over from the East Bay, but being a part of what we have been calling basically a gap year? How good has the fan base been?
I think our fan base is unbelievable. We are so lucky. I mean, let's be honest here, guys. We moved an arena across the bay. It's only 8 miles. It's not that far. Having said that, for some people, it's a big deal. And we moved it. We retained 70% of our ticket holders, which I think is
awesome,
pretty darn good. And we got some new ones as well, which we're really happy about. It's been a really tough first year. This is what you don't want to happen in a new arena, although it is better than happening the year before, from my perspective.
Right.
but I think it's been an incredible year. And here we are. We have 12, almost an historically bad year for us, for a lot of reasons, I would argue, that are out of our control. But 12 wins. Not good. We're the worst team in the NBA right now. I never thought I'd be able to say that, but we are there. And our fans, you go to the game last night, and now I know it was Zion, but the place was packed. It had an electricity to it. We have incredible fans. I can't tell you how many people come up to me all the time and are so positive this year, all the time, so nice. And that is definitely better than being booed, which I wasn't in the past. Okay. And maybe we earned it to some extent, but they have been great. And I really appreciate our fans so much. The fact that they've been so loyal to our team and think that we, you know, deliver a good game, a good arena, and hopefully a good product again next year.
All right. Hold that thought. Yep. Warriors owner Joe Lacob in studio with Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Shoot your questions to the Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. We're going to continue this conversation. We'll start this hour. We'll get a little bit more serious. Which, again, is
I'm
really
not saying you need to get serious. I'm starting to detect there's a more serious nature to this group than I thought, but
we're very personal. We're like chameleons. You think at 1 minute you got us figured out, and then the next minute, here we come. Jokes aside, we were talking in the last hour. You had mentioned the fact it's been a tough year, 12 wins, but the idea of it being a lost year doesn't necessarily have to be the case. You can get something out of this. You talked about how Durant could have just left, or you could have found a way to get something out of it. Productive. How do you find a way to make this a productive year?
Well, we're working on it. You have to really, probably the hardest year we've had in terms of our basketball ops group we're all flying all over the country, going to more games, college games, than we've, including me, than we've ever been to. Oh, yeah.
You're out on the road scouting.
Oh, I've been to places you wouldn't believe already this year. I guess I'm not really allowed to say the – I could say the cities at least. Yeah, I've been to Iowa State. I've been to Georgia. I've been to several places. And we've got actually a bunch more in March that we're all going to. But it's not because – it's not that I'm the judge. The guys are going to make the decision. But I just want to be up to snuff. I want to be aware. I want to have seen these guys. Because we all know who the guys are in the rough dozen, right. dozen players, let's say. And it helps to have seen them in person because, as you know, being on a football field,
right.
it looks a lot different when you're up close when it does on TV. There's just things you see that you don't otherwise see. And, you know, if you came to our game last night, you see Zion in person. That's a whole different thing than what you see on TV. Let me tell you, I don't care what you think you see on TV.
Is that the first time you had seen him live in a game?
No, I saw him in Chicago at the All-Star game. And I might have seen him at Duke, too. But he is, oh, my God, you know, he's just enormous. It's the only other player that I felt that way about was LeBron. When I first saw him in person, courtside, right. I was like, are you kidding me? This doesn't look real. Right? How can someone that big move that
right.
fast?
Right.
And I feel that way Zion, too. He's not as tall, but he's enormous. And how can he possibly jump that high and be that quick off his feet? So things like that are really important to go see. And you're not going to – 18-year-old freshman in college, there's a lot of projecting to do, certainly. Mm-hmm. And right. there's chances of getting it all wrong, but – the more we see, the more the better.
When you talk about, hey, you like to go and see those guys up close and personal, you're absolutely right. A lot of guys can be built like Tarzan, play like Jane when you know, but then when you get to see, do they meet the eye test and all those things that you like to see? How is it with player owners? You know, I was lucky enough to be on some ownership that, you know, knew Dean Spanos, knew, you know, the family. How is it with you and like players? Is it a balance? How do you handle players personally?
A personal relationship?
Sure.
You know, this is a tough one. Everyone, if you're the kind of guy that dreams about owning a sports team, let's say someday, you know, it's a little different than you kind of imagine in that it's hard to get too close.
Right.
Because unfortunately, to be good at my job, you're going to have to make some tough decisions that, quite frankly, a lot of people are not going to agree with necessarily. And that's happened to us over the years. And my own wife, she was not my wife at the time, but Nicole was very mad at me when we traded Monta Ellis. I'll never forget. because she was close to his wife and to him. We actually were. We were new owners. And you have to make tough decisions sometimes. You have to go with what your basketball people say we need to do. And that's a tough thing. Because I like so many of our – what's important to us is not only – it's who the people are as players. I really like, we want to bring in people that fit our organization. It's really important. Intelligence, character,
right.
These things really matter. In fact, wait, in this draft, don't be surprised if you see us, maybe we don't do the obvious, because we're going to put into the mix things that we maybe wouldn't have done many years ago. We're character, intelligence, how they think about things, their competitiveness quotient. These things are really, really, we think, really important. It's not just about being the great AAU player. So back to your question, I mean, it's just, I can get close, but I can't get too close. I mean, I like to be friendly with them, and I am. But I hated this trade deadline. You know, we don't trade players. You've noticed over the years, we've hardly pulled off a trade. Part of that's just because it's not kind of our culture. And part because we had a good team.
Yeah,
but there is that.
But we did it through the draft and through a couple of free agent acquisitions. But we're in a transition period right now, and I hated to see some of these guys go. I mean, it bothered me.
Mm.
And those are tough things to do, but it's a business.
Got to be done.
To some
right.
extent. And, you gotta do it. And by the way, I don't get mad. The other side of the coin, I can't get mad when Kevin Durant, who I felt pretty close with, decides he's going to leave.
Right.
Which to me made no sense. Like, you're the best organization, I hope he thinks, in the world, or maybe
winning.
Other. Winning, other great players. I mean, the new arena. To me, there was like every reason in the world to stay, but I'm not going to be mad at him because, you know, it's his life and he earned the right. And for whatever reason, he decided he wanted to leave. I can't control that.
Right.
I tried.
No,
but I can't control that. And so what I'm pointing is you can't get too close because you just don't really know how these things are going to twist and turn.
Warriors owner Joe Lacob in studio with Joe Low and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. You mentioned how character is going to be very important when you're studying the prospects that are coming out. What brought that about? What was it that you said that maybe back in years ago you wouldn't have looked at that as much, but now you're looking at it more? What led you to that realization that that's a quality that's going to take very much importance during this process?
Competitiveness thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Competitiveness, the overall character that you had mentioned.
I think just 10 years of watching this game and other teams and who drafted who and what kind of players they turned out to be, you start to get an interesting view. It's not just about I hate to do this because I know we are all believe in the measurables. We all believe in fact, we've been leaders, most would argue, in terms of all the analysis. Stuff that's happened in sports and in the NBA. But, you know, sometimes you can overdo or overthink the wingspan or the height or the standing reach or there's a lot of other statistical categories. Physical attributes are important, no question. But there's probably not given enough importance by many people to this whole competitiveness thing. How competitive are they? How much do they want to win? How much do they want to fit within a certain culture? That matters. And Steve Kerr is, the Zen master at all this. We're lucky to have him. And having him and our group understand some of those features, part of the feature set, if you want to call it, I think we're all working together and trying to put it all together and hopefully come up with a better overall metric of what is going to make for a successful draft.
And partly this comes from you being out on the road and you playing basketball yourself. Do you feel like the example that you set by really rolling up your sleeves as an owner, does that help to permeate the culture to the GM and to Rick Welts and Steve all the way down to the players?
I hope so, because they can't be here if they're not agreeing. No, I'm only kidding. They can't be here if it's not about agreeing. It's about discussion. And it's about... the worst thing in the world would be for them to all come up and do their work all year long about, let's say, the draft or a trade deadline. And, if I was a guy that just didn't really know enough to know that I didn't know enough,
right?
If I hadn't at least seen or thought a lot about all these things, it would make it difficult for them to have that conversation with me. And so I think it's my job to be educated. Doesn't mean I'm about making the decision. I'm not. I might break a tie at the end, right? That's that's why you pay $450 million. You get good seats and you get to break a tie. That's about it. That's about it.
That's how some of these caucuses should work.
Right? Yeah. But my job is really to hire these great guys, have them do their work, be educated enough to listen carefully to what they say and to read what others say, by the way, too. I read everything. I listen to everything. Maybe you guys are joking around too much for me in the morning, but I'm kidding. But I do
it's
think
okay.
you have to be up on all this stuff. You have to, people ask, why were the Warriors successful the last 10 years? And the answer is really not one thing. It's like any organization. It's not just the Warriors. It's really any team, any business. It's all about every little thing.
Right.
It's every little thing. There are too many smart people in this world and too many smart teams and too much money chasing all these few assets that you just can't rest on any given day. You've got to be always trying to get the edge over someone else or any kind of an edge, and you have to be really up to date on every little detail, and you have to pay attention in your business to every little detail. If I hear there was a problem with, the restrooms in the building, I'm listening. Those are the things that are important. Every little detail makes an arena great. Every little detail makes a team great. And so we have to do that. And that sounds exhausting. It sounds intense. And it sounds tiring.
Yeah.
And it is. But too bad. If you want to be great, you got to really pay attention.
How does that, when you're talking about players and even staff and people that work in your building, the it factor? Like you talk about the tangibles. Does that player have it when you see the Pascals and the different guys? Maybe they're not as athletic as the Stephs. But how do you know a player or even people that you work with that you're putting in the right position, coaches, that they have it? You know what I mean? That different tangible people don't see that you're talking about.
I don't know what it is, but sometimes you know it when you see it, right? Is that
right?
Your point? And that's still Jerry West. You know, he always point his fingers at the eyeballs.
No.
There's stats, and then there's that. There's your eyeball test. So I think it's a combination of all those things is the truth. It's not one thing. And, you know, it could be the it factor. You might have it, and you might be in the wrong place and in the wrong system, and it's not going to work. So I think it's a combination of all these little things, and it's certainly good to have it. It's good to have the measurables. It's good to have the right coach. It's good to have the right organization. All those things matter to try to achieve success. And, you know, hopefully we can be successful here recreating what we've had. It's a high standard.
Warriors owner Joe Lacob with us here on 95.7 The Game. You mentioned Zion earlier, who was in town last night, had a huge game. What is it, 8 straight games with 20 or more points now? He's shattering records for rookies. You as a basketball fan, which we talked about right out of the gate, before you even own the team, you love the sport. Watchability rankings. Who are the guys in the NBA that you just like to watch? When you're going to come to the stadium, when you're going to be watching on TV, which players jump out?
Okay, I'm not trying to recruit any of these guys.
No. We cleared this.
This is not anything like that.
We just watch ability rankings.
As a fan.
Just a fan.
As a fan.
With pretty decent seats.
I'm no different than anybody else. I mean, you watch what Milwaukee is doing and with Giannis and his leadership and what he's, in a way, he's developed. I don't know if you know this. This is what people forget. His first year, I don't think he even played hardly. He was the 15th pick in the draft. He didn't even play. His second year, I don't think he was all that great either. He has made himself into an incredible player. So do I like – I love watching him not only for how great he is, but also just what he's done, the process, the character build, you know, that was there, obviously, to make that happen. I think that's pretty awesome. So I'm a big fan of watching him play. I'm a big fan of, you know, Zion Williamson already. I love people that smile. I love Magic Johnson as a player when he was a player because he smiled and interacted with the fans in that way. You know, with the advantage we have over football, you wear a helmet.
Absolutely.
They didn't get to know you.
No question.
Baseball, no one seems to kind of know, as at least they don't, maybe they don't mark it right. I don't know, but nobody seems to know who that many players are. But basketball, they do. They have a huge advantage, and social media contributes to that. It's just a wonderful sport in that regard. And so it is important to me, the demeanor of a player on the court. Magic Johnson, to me, is the ultimate. Always smiling. I love that.
That's got to be tough growing up as a Celtics fan, though.
It was. But I became a Lakers fan with Magic Johnson. I'll be honest. I lived in Southern California. It sounds awful. I know, blasphemous. but he was just special. I love that aspect of him. And I think players that interact with the fans in a way like that smile, I think that's important. Now, not everyone can do it or wants to do it, and that's fine, too. But I think that kind of thing matters.
And you got a chance to see Giannis certainly at the All-Star game. What did you think of the new All-Star game format? And what can we do to get the All-Star game back here to the Bay? Because it's been since 2000, which was before your tenure, obviously. The Bay Area's got to be due for another All-Star game, aren't they?
We're going to do it. They booked these things out way in advance. So the next three, looking at Raymond here, three I think are planned. And I think we have a good chance somewhere here in the mid-decade is the bottom line. It may be better that way, to be frank, because the first year or two of a new building, we got a lot. Look, it's a great arena, but there's a lot of kinks that maybe you all don't see to work out and to make sure it's really flawless. And I think it'll be a better game when we do have it.
For you personally, have you been checking out the concerts there?
Of course,
which ones stand out to you as some of your favorites? Because like right out of the gate, the schedule was outstanding, and there's so much more that's going to be coming with the summer and everything. But what were the events you enjoyed the most? I was always curious about this.
Well, I love the first one because, in fact, when I'm just putting those pictures up in my office.
This was the Metallica Symphony?
Yes, Metallica and the San Francisco Symphony. I loved it because it was so uniquely Bay Area and uniquely San Francisco. No one else really could have pulled that off, right? And that was an idea of one of our employees, actually, to do the 20-year reunion of something that had happened in Berkeley 20 years prior. And I thought that was great. It was in the round and in the center. There was just something very special about that. I'd say that, and I personally loved the Elton John concerts. I was surprised by how vigorous the guy was at, 72? I mean, I was actually kind of stunned. And the sets, I thought the building looked great. They did a great job. Those are the two that really stick in my mind. There have been many other good ones as well. My wife just went to the Oprah thing on Saturday. I heard it was phenomenal. Men didn't go to that, I don't think. maybe a few. But I heard it was spectacular. So, there, you know, we've had some good ones. We're going to have a lot more good ones.
Are there, since it's essentially your building, do you have a band you want to bring here just for your own personal benefit? Obviously, you know, the fans, we can come as well. But, like, do you have a target band in mind to come in for this sort of thing?
Yes.
Interesting. Interesting.
I don't know if I should name bands, but I'm a peculiar. I'm sort of a 70s music. I kind of lost track in the 80s because I was working so hard. Understood. My wife always accuses me of calls it the lost decade. Music. I know none of the music from the 80s. I have a couple of that. I'm thinking about, but I don't know if they'd fill the arena these days is the problem.
Okay, so I was going to say, because I know one that's very popular that's doing another U.S. tour.
Who's that?
The thing is, they didn't have a great time down at Levi's because some of the rules. I was wondering if maybe, you know, Mick and Keith would be someone that you would want to see. They're more 60s, maybe. I don't know.
You're talking about the Stones?
The Stones, yeah.
Well, they're my all-time favorite.
Really?
Oh, yeah. All-time. Absolutely love. I've been to like 4 or 5 Stones concerts. And, oh, my God. I don't know. Can they still do – they're getting up there.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can – if they're still doing another tour. And the problem is they do – a lot of these guys now, if they're really big, they only want to do stadium tours.
Yeah.
Which I think is a mistake personally because – personally, it's just personal. Nothing wrong with Levi's. It's great. Love Jed. Love those guys. But it's just hard to engage for me in a stadium concert, whereas an arena, especially ours, being as intimate as it is, I just think, I'd love to have the Stones in our – yes, that would be one that would be there.
I like it, too, because you're like, I'm not sure if they could do it. It's like subtly calling them out. Like, hey, Mick, Keith, you hear this?
They should come do the greatest arena in the world. Why can you have a life career like that and not play the greatest arena in the world? Come on, guys.
We'll show this guy.
It's an absolute
in San Francisco. Yeah.
I like that, the way you call them out like right, that. Right. I don't know if Mickey Keith has one more good one in him or not.
How is it, though, being an owner, can you just pick up the phone and start, you have Raymond, pick up the phone, I want 2 Super Bowl tickets. I want to go to the World Series. Has it perks? Tell me about those perks. Like being an owner, can you go to any event that you want?
Anything else on your schedule of questions here today?
I guess I can
make sure we get to.
I can pay to go to any event.
But yeah. I mean, that's nice, too. Yeah.
But no, I like the Super Bowl. I'm not a huge Super Bowl guy. I've been to 3. Yeah. I just feel they're not. I love them generally, but for what they are as a sport. But, you know, they're just not they're not in a home team environment. So neutral site kind of bothers me. However, this year I did go to the Super Bowl in Miami because it was 49ers playing, and I'm a big 49er fan.
Right.
And I loved it. I thought it was spectacular. I thought Miami did a great job. It was very crowded, but they did a great job. I thought the whole thing was just – and unfortunately, except for the last – 8 minutes of the game. It was a hell of a game, too. Up 20-10. I mean, God, I wish we had won. But The truth is, that was a great one. And yes, I do love going to sporting events like that. There's a few I still haven't gone to, and so I do intend to do that.
What's on the bucket list?
This is crazy, but I've never been to Wimbledon.
Never been to Wimbledon.
And I was a tennis player, high school, college, and I've never been to Wimbledon.
You know that was Johnny Carson's favorite event. Johnny Carson took 2 weeks off at least every year in the summer to go to Wimbledon. Johnny Carson loved Wimbledon.
I know. I do need to do it. The problem is it's right in a time frame that's tough for me. We have NBA board meeting in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And basketball always takes priority.
I was going to say. Like no matter how successful you get, though, you still got responsibilities.
Yeah. It's true.
Oh, man.
Have you been to the Masters in Augusta? And
I have.
Will you go to the PGA in May?
Yeah, I probably will. Partying? I will. I'd rather play golf than... then watch it in a tournament format. I played in the 18T a whole bunch of times, as you know, and I love playing in it. That is such a great event. And the 18T, that is. The Masters I've been to once, and I thought it was actually maybe the best venue for golf I've ever seen. If you've ever been. Any of you been?
Yeah, I went.
No.
It's interesting because the way they have you walk into it, you can kind of go and see so many different holes. It's just the way it's laid out.
Right.
It's very special for a golf tournament. Because more normally, you go to like Formula One or you go to a golf tournament and you only get to see a small fraction of what's going on. But the Masters is actually laid out quite interestingly. So I would actually, if you have any interest at all in watching someone play golf, you should go to it once in your life. It's worth seeing. It's very unique.
And you, as a person who loves attention to detail, probably appreciate the crosswalks that are all littered with green rocks. That way they don't show up on TV.
Yeah, it's actually amazing. I've played there a bunch of times. I do would rather play it than go to the Masters.
Strong flex right there.
I was going to say, it's got to be strong.
I have. I got invited by friends that are members. I'm not. But it's a phenomenal, you know, it's great to play. It's like playing at a stadium that is historic. And or going to, in Boston, you want to play at Fenway Park, right? If you're a baseball player, it's just unbelievably unique. So I think that's kind of what it's about. You know, it's the whole gestalt of being there and playing where others have played. And
You played with Steph?
Oh, yeah.
Where do you guys like to play? And wait, actually, you know, scratch that. I want to redo the question.
Okay.
You played with Steph, yes. How does that work? Because everyone probably plays with Steph and isn't really going to go at him because it's Steph, except you're the boss. So does he have to lay strokes to you, or how's that play out?
Damn right he has to lay strokes to me. You know how good he is?
Is he ever at a point where it might be 18 and the match is close and he's looking at this three-footer and he's like, two MVPs?
Okay, I probably shouldn't tell this story on air.
No, it's okay.
But you know I'm going to say it now.
Yeah.
First time I ever played golf with Steph was like, I think the first year or so that we owned the team. I went to, I think I took him down to Pebble Beach.
Very nice.
And I love Pebble Beach. It's one of my favorite places in the whole world. And we played there, and if I remember correctly, Spyglass. Mm. First time I'd ever played with Steph at Pebble. I beat him.
Wow.
All right. I beat him by one stroke on the last hole.
On the 18th of Pebble, you beat Steph Curry.
I don't want to embarrass him, but I did beat him.
It's out there now.
And I know he'll remember this. I have never won again. That's all I'll say.
That's great.
But I can claim one time.
And of all courses to do it on.
And Pebble Beach, my favorite course.
Wow. So that's the favorite. When Joe Lacob's ranking his favorite courses, Pebble Beach is number one?
Yes. I love golf, and I love playing all over the world. It's one of my favorite things to do with friends. It's so social. It's just green, it's fun, but I put Pebble Beach number one for me personally. Right. I'm not saying it's the best golf course in the world. But it's special for me.
Yeah.
What else would be on the list if you were going to do
Pine Valley?
Pine Valley,
unbelievable golf course. Like I love it.
New Jersey,
yes. In southern New Jersey, not an interesting place necessarily to visit or beautiful to see, but the golf course itself, hole for hole, shot for shot. Maybe the best pure golf course in the world. Talk about pure, that word pure, like an arena, right? You want it pure.
Right, right.
It's pure golf, and it's an amazing place. And my top three would be Royal Dornoch in the north of Scotland. Hmm. I think is just incredible. You know, all my friends, I love the old course. I love playing in Scotland and in Ireland, but Royal Dornoch is special. And it's up in northern Scotland, so a lot of people sometimes don't get there. I think it used to be ranked number 12 in the world by those that do these things. And now it may be as high as number 3 or 4. So maybe we had some insight.
Brought some love to it. Jeez. So how many rounds would you say you get out and play a year?
Not as much as I used to. This NBA thing.
Yeah, take a little time.
This is actually a job. I thought it was not totally a job, but it's a job. And it's, you know, basketball dominates for me in so many ways during the basketball season. And so but the great thing about it is when you're making the playoffs, it's maybe my greatest reason to get back, right. Is that we have these unbelievably fun, during the playoffs, we play golf in the, owners do, some of my friends, in these opposing cities. And so I love doing that because in all of these cities, even you may not think of it as a golf mecca, but even in Oklahoma City, for instance, there's I think it's called Oak Tree. A really good golf course hosted the PGA. So we've done that. Houston, wherever city we've played golf in, and that's really fun. So greatest reason to get back to the finals is to have four different venues to play golf at along the way.
It's tremendous.
When you're in the playoffs or you're in the finals, do owners have any sort of behind-the-scenes competitive juices flowing? Or are Florida oranges versus your Bay Area clam chowder on the line sort of thing?
You mean between other owners, other teams?
Like you and Cleveland's owner for those years, or you and Fertitta, if it's ever something in the Western Conference?
You know, not as much as I thought there would be. There's some of that.
Like when you bought in, you thought there'd be this whole
I thought there would be a little more of that. And, I mean, there's some. Me with the Celtics guys, maybe, because I used to be a part owner in the Celtics before this. But not as much as I thought. Now, Tillman Fertitta, you bring up, he is definitely a competitive one. So, yeah, there's a little bit of that there, perhaps. Our friend Mr. Ballmer on the Clippers, I think, would fall into that category. He's a very competitive dude also. And we've been on stage together a few years ago at Stanford. We did an interview together. It was us and two of us, and there was someone in the middle. It's my favorite interview, actually, on stage, going at it with him. That was fun. Wow. He's a cool guy. He's a very interesting guy. So, but not a lot of, not as much as I would have thought.
So when you were buying into the NBA, you think you're coming into this ownership fraternity. There's going to be a lot of this drawing.
Really like that.
Not as much. A little too professional for you.
I'm not saying it's too professional, but it's they're a little more not as fun as as I would have thought. Like I keep saying, why don't we all have the NBA board meeting out at Pebble Beach? All right, Adam, are you listening? Why don't we have the NBA board meeting out at Pebble Beach? Have some fun along the way here.
Right.
God, this is supposed to be a little fun, right?
Right.
So, but you know, not a lot of them play golf. So I don't know. We just go back to New York and wear a suit, and, except most of us, that is. And it's just I wish it were a little more fun, but it's a great group of businessmen, all from. You know, and women from different businesses, and you know, I do respect a lot of them, but they got to loosen up a little bit.
I love it. Has it changed, Mr. Lichter, when you think about where you're at when you're young, far as who is the athlete out there that you said, man, I'm just enamored with him. As far as now with business, so is there anyone that you talk about, sports world or just entertainment world? What's always intrigued you most? To be like, I get an autograph or a picture from business world, whatever it may be, those two parallels.
I'm not sure what you're saying. It's who I would like to.
Like when you were younger, was it the more of the entertainer, the athlete that you got? God, you always wanted a team. Was it Larry Bird? Who was that guy that said, man, I made you love sports? And then in the business world, who was that individual that kind of drove you?
Well, inspirations.
Inspirations. Okay, yeah. Good. In sports, in basketball, let's start in basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a – you're going to laugh. I loved the Celtics in the 60s. Obviously, I grew up there. But, you know, my favorite basketball player was Jerry West.
Wow.
He came in and single-handedly tried to destroy the Celtics. He only did it once. He won one title. But he was just inspirational to me. He was unbelievable. And that's one of the reasons we hired him and brought him on for those years, because I love that guy's competitiveness. And he was just amazing, and not that some of the Celtics weren't, but
right.
So he was an inspiration. Magic Johnson, as another guy I talked to early on too, because I loved his approach to. I hate bringing up all these Lakers, but but I did. I always respected his the way he handled himself with the fans, and his love for the sport. I thought that was really incredible. And you know, my third is probably Steph Curry. In all honesty, of all the guys you look through history, because I just think he culturally is so incredibly impressive to an organization, and so impressive to, you know, for our fans. There's nobody that doesn't like, unless you're a Cleveland Cavalier fan, I guess. There's nobody, or maybe LeBron, I don't know. But there's nobody that doesn't like Steph Curry, you know, or want to play with him or be like Steph. Male, female, young, old, it doesn't matter. My dad, every time I talk, all he wants to talk about is Steph. So, I mean, it's just the way it is. And so I respect and admire the way he approaches his life as well as the game. So those guys in sports really, they turn me on. And then in business, boy, there's a lot of different names we could go through. But, you know, I've always been one to, I'm not really a, some people want to get all the autographs and do all that stuff and hang out with all the other owners. There are some owners, by the way, that's what they want to do. That's why they buy a team. And by the way, that's fine. They can do that. I'm not really that guy. You know, I'm more about, I love our organization. I like the people that work for us and for me. I like being part of this group that is trying to achieve something great. To me, it's more of an internally focused thing. And the love of the game itself, as opposed to going and, you know, when we were in Chicago, there were a lot of parties, and I did go to a bunch of them more than I normally would. And they were fun, but you know, just going to the party to hang out with whatever rapper, or whatever. I mean, I like them. I like meeting them. They're cool and everything, but it's not my thing to go like say I did that. I mean, I don't really, that's not why I'm doing this.
Before we let you go, we're up against it. So very quick answer here. Wednesday, your beautiful building is going to be disgraced with the disgrace at Chase. Low
I've
versus
heard all
Diggs.
About this. This is huge.
1-on-1, 2-11. Warriors owner Joe Lacob, who you got in this thing? And don't you dare try to get political with me by giving me an answer where you like both, or you're just hoping for a competitive.
Okay, I need to know. Can I have one piece of data?
Sure.
Did either one of the two combatants
Yeah.
Did either one of the two combatants play basketball in high school or college?
I played in high school, yeah.
Played a little bit in high school.
No.
Tiny bit.
No, low wrestled.
Yeah.
Low was a wrestler, yeah. I was cut twice from the JV team. I played as a freshman, was cut twice, and wised up and didn't go out as a senior.
And you? Good luck with that data.
No, didn't play basketball at all.
Take that for data.
Played in junior high. And...
But you're an athlete.
In air quotes.
That's...
I'm going with you.
Joe Lake,
I'm going with you.
Renzo Neal. He's an athlete.
That's it,
he gives a real answer.
Back him down. Back him down.
I'm a
motorboat.
He didn't dodge it. We appreciate it and everything else.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I'm just in the studio here and I got eyes.
Jerry West.
He's a multi-gazillionaire for a reason.
I mean, I don't want to go on the measurables alone, but... Yeah, I just got to do
it. I'll be honest, I've always been more of a goober guy anyway. So. I'm going to walk off.
That's it, Joe Lacob. Thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it. Good luck to you. Good luck to the Warriors, all that good stuff. Joe Lo and Dibs, we're back in a flash. 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.